Hello, my name's Dave Emery. This is the second half of For the Record program number 211, dealing with the fascist and Nazi element within the black metal music scene and associated forms of a racist religion or alternative religion such as Satanism and Odinism. As I indicated in the first half of this program, this is not to be misunderstood as characterizing all or even most of the black metal music scene as fascist or Nazi. That is not the case. Nonetheless, it's worth noting that there are fascist and Nazi elements within the black metal music scene which are attempting to spread their influence, and that should be noted in this context. We're going to resume the discussion with an excerpting of the consummately important book Dreamer of the Day, subtitled Francis Parker Yockey and the Post-War Fascist International. This is about Francis Parker Yockey, a not very well-known but very, very important post-war fascist theoretician who worked with the Third Reich and also with its post-World War II incarnation. This book is authored by the brilliant Kevin Coogan, capital C-O-O-G-A-N, and is published in soft cover by Autano Media, copyright 1999. Their website is at autonomedia.org. And we're going to resume the discussion with a footnote to a passage that we just read in the first half of program number 211. This alludes to the Abraxas Foundation. That is a milieu of industrial culture music fans, which is derivative to a considerable extent of the Church of Satan, and which embraces a number of different elements, including fascist black metal music, or I shouldn't call them black metal musicians, but fascists such as Boyd Rice and Michael Moynihan, both of whom are very influential in the black metal music scene, though not themselves black metal musicians as such. I would also stress that this type of music is unfamiliar to me, so I'm relying on those who know much more about it. I have been exposed to some of this type of music, and I want to stress, though, that it is not my cup of tea, meaning I don't know very much about it. So that advisory, just like Leonard Zisken, who wrote of it in the Searchlight magazine. I do, however, know quite a bit about fascism, and there are some really ripe elements within the black metal music scene. The Abraxas Foundation contains some of the ripest of said elements, and Kevin Coogan writes about people like Michael Moynihan and Boyd Rice and the Abraxas Foundation in a footnote to, or in Dreamer of the Day, as follows. One of the most interesting publications of the Abraxas tendency was the music magazine The Fifth Path, edited by Robert Ward. Another zine from this genre, Ohm Clock, ran an article in its spring 1996 issue promoting Julius Avila. A regular writer in both the music and theory orbit of Abraxas is Michael Moynihan, who has also written for the Church of Satan magazine The Black Flame. See Moynihan, The Faustian Spirit of Fascism, unquote, in The Black Flame, Volume 5, Numbers 1 and 2 of 1994. Moynihan's article also appeared in the February 1994 issue of Plexus, the theoretical journal of an Omaha group called the National Workers League. For more on the occult links to Yockeyism, see the appendix The Devil and Francis Parker Yockey, unquote. And in another footnote about a publisher named Adam Parfrey, who's part of this milieu, Parfrey also published Joseph Goebbels' novel Michael, New York, Amok Press, 1987. Goebbels wrote the novel in 1923 when he was a follower of the left struck, unquote, Strasser wing of the NSDAP. That, by the way, is the German Nazi Party under Hitler. As we're going to touch on later on in the program, one should understand in analyzing fascism that street troops for the fascist and Nazi movement are generally recruited from among the more alienated and or marginalized elements of society. Of people who are going to march in the forefront of the brown shirts, for example, are not going to be stockbrokers or prep school teachers. Ultimately, the alienated and or marginalized people who are utilized as shock troops for the street elements of fascism are frequently liquidated, as was the Strasserite movement of the brown shirts in the Night of the Long Knives, 1934. Please note that for later reference. For those who would like to examine this more fully, this issue more fully than I can in this program, Kevin Coogan provides some magazine list references here for music zines that contain an exchange of views between himself and also the author or the publisher of Hit List, an anti-fascist activist named Jeff Bale, and some of the people discussed here, such as Michael Moynihan and Adam Perfrey. Repeating a footnote from the last section, for a detailed examination of both Lords of Chaos and Michael Moynihan, see my article, How Black is Black Metal, in Hit List, Volume 1, Number 1, February and March of 1999. Also see an exchange between Feral House publisher Adam Parfrey and myself in Hit List, Volume 1, Number 3, June of July of 1999. For Moynihan's reaction to my essay, see his interview in I, Number 23, September and October of 1999. My response appears in Hit List, Volume 1, Number 4, of September and October of 1999. In our last section, and also in the one just concluded, we took a look, at last section of the broadcast, we took a look at Michael Moynihan, about whom we will have more to say in a minute, and his intentions to publicize the works of Julius Evola. Julius Evola was an occult fascist theoretician who counted among his associates and benefactors the SD, that's the SS Intelligence Service. Kevin Coogan writes about Evola's sponsorship by the SD as follows in Dreamer of the Day. Coogan writes, after Mussolini's fall from power in late July of 1943, Evola fled to Germany with SD help. Once in Berlin, he went to work for the SD's Italian section. Evola and Farinacci left Berlin on September 18, 1943, and returned to Rome to organize an SD-backed political group called the Movimento per la Rinascita della Italia. After a visit by American intelligence agents to his apartment, Evola decided once again to pack his bags and return north. This time, however, he headed to Vienna. Evola's SD work at the end of the war is shrouded in mystery. Historian Richard Drake says that while he was in Vienna, quote, Evola performed vital liaison services for the SS as Nazi Germany sought to recruit a European army for the defense of the continent against the Soviet Union and the United States, unquote. According to his own account, Evola spent his time living incognito while doing, quote, intellectual, unquote, research. But what kind of research? While Evola was in Vienna, the SD supplied him with a series of arcane texts plundered from private libraries and rare book collections. The SD bureau that provided him with these documents was OMPT 7, an obscure branch that served as an RSHA research library. By the way, the RSHA was the hierarchy of the SS and the Third Reich security services. But by the way, we made a reference to Joseph Goebbels. He was the Third Reich's propaganda minister, of course. Continuing. With this precious archive, Evola closely studied Masonic rituals and translated certain esoteric texts for a book called Histoire secrète des six sociétés secrètes. It never appeared because Evola claimed that all his documents were lost during the Russian bombardment. So again, note the SD and SS affiliations of Julius Evola, one of the people being promoted by some of the fascist elements within the black metal scene. We saw reference in the passage that I read just before that last one to a member of the Abraxas Foundation and of this milieu. That is a publisher named Adam Parfrey, last name P-A-R-F-R-E-Y. Mr. Parfrey's Feral House, nay Amok Press, has quite a bit of influence in alternative cultures and also publishes conspiracy research as well. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This member of the audience in Los Angeles sent me an article from a publication called New Times. This is a free weekly newspaper available in the Los Angeles area. It's the New Times issue of August 26th through September 1st of 1999. By the way, their website is www.newtimesla.com. That's N-E-W-T-I-M-E-S-L-A.com. This article is by Scott Timberg, T-I-M-B-E-R-G. It's entitled Prince of Darkness, Adam Parfrey, subtitled Adam Parfrey, publisher of the troublemaking press Feral House, has made it his life's work to propagate the apocalypse. And this deals with the aforementioned Adam Perfy, part of the Abraxas milieu that Kevin Coogan was writing about. Skipping down of Feral House, and this written by Scott Timberg, who visited it. Speaking of Perfy, he writes, behind him, a framed poster shows a swastika'd sleeve stabbing a knife through the Bible with the words, "This is the enemy," unquote, underneath. Of one of the efforts of some of the efforts of Feral House begun as a mock press, Timberg writes as follows in New Times. In the evenings after work was done, Perfy used the printing equipment at PAJ to publish a collection of essays about Charles Manson, a novel written by Joseph Goebbels in his student days, and Rants, a collection of angry essays and speeches by poet Ezra Pound, radical feminist Valerie Solanas, S-O-L-A-N-A-S, and the anti-Semitic French writer Louis-Ferdinand Céline, C-E-L-I-N-E. About one of Perfy's friends, the aforementioned fascist Boyd Rice, a member of the Council of Nine of the Church of Satan, by the way. That's the ruling body of the Church of Satan. His association with Perfy is described as follows by Timberg. Before he'd even published his first book, Perfy had a fortuitous meeting. His friend Boyd Rice, a notorious satanic prankster who dresses in neo-Nazi regalia, introduced him to Church of Satan leader Anton LaVey, who drove a black hearse and kept automated mannequins in his San Francisco home. I would note that Boyd Rice, again, is a member of the Council of Nine, the leading body, governing body of the Church of Satan. He's also a former member of the American Front. Skipping down of another of Perfy's friends here, one of his closest friends, Michael Moynihan, that we've talked about him, of course, before, beginning again, one of his closest friends, Michael Moynihan, describes Perfy's stay in Portland, Oregon as, quote, "a somewhat uneasy abode," unquote. Moynihan, a small, articulate guy who says things like, quote, "if I were given the opportunity to start up the next Holocaust, I would definitely have far more lenient entrance requirements than the Nazis did," unquote, moved to Portland in part to work with Feral House, and then remained there working as a writer, musician, and a fascist activist. With Storm Productions, he has published the work of American neo-Nazi James Mason and sold CDs and paraphernalia with a pagan-slash-rightist cast. By the way, another friend of Perfy's here and another member of this milieu was the late Keith Stimley, a Holocaust denier who, from 1983 to 1985, was the editor of the Journal of Historical Review, the publication of the Institute for Historical Review, the number one Holocaust denial institution in the country. By the way, I don't want to be misunderstood as characterizing Mr. Perfy as a fascist. I have no such information. I know very little about him. And I do not want to be misunderstood in this particular context. Others, I would add, who do know him have made such claims, but I do not have such information in my possession, nor do I make any such claim. I first became aware of Feral House because they publish conspiracy material, and in particular, some of their volumes purport to be affiliated with and or make reference to my late, very dear friend, Mae Brussel. The very elements that Messrs. Perfy and others are either associated with and or extol, such as Charles Manson, Nazis and fascists, serial killers, the occultism of the SS, and Holocaust deniers, Satanists also, those are the very elements that my late friend Mae Brussel was opposed to. So those who value the work of Mae Brussel should please note that in this context. More about Michael Moynihan, one of the principal influences, one of the principal fascist influences on the black metal milieu. And again, that's not a fascist milieu, but there are fascist elements within it attempting to push it in that direction. Research credit on the following goes to the aforementioned Kevin Coogan, who researched this from the publication 68 Seconds. This contains an ad for a book called Might is Right. That is authored by someone who writes under the name of Ragnar Redbeard. Ragnar, R-A-G-N-A-R, and Redbeard is Redbeard. The book contains a foreword by Anton Zandor LaVey, and it credits Michael Jenkins, a.k.a. Michael Moynihan, in this particular book. What I noted in this context was some of the other people involved with the midwiving, so to speak, of this particular volume. The cover of the book reads, "Foreword by Anton Zandor LaVey, with afterword by George Eric Hawthorne of Rahoa." That's it stands for Racial Holy War. That is an organization affiliated with the Church of the Creator, a domestic fascist organization, a Nazi organization that we'll talk about in a minute. And editor's notes by Katya Lane, Mrs. David Lane. Mrs. David Lane is obviously married to David Lane. David Lane was a member of the Order. That's the Nazi organization that killed former talk show host Alan Berg. Well, he's former because he got killed. That organization also staged bank robberies and armored car holdups in the mid-1980s. They were led by the late Robert Matthews, and whose disciple and associate Buford Furrow staged a very bloody shooting in Los Angeles in the late summer of 1999. Note also, as we've seen in the past, that the Order was funded, by, according to one informant, by, quote, German families, unquote, in Latin America. Three guesses who that was. The Order was inspired by the book The Turner Diaries, which also helped to inspire Timothy McVeigh and company. Please note that particular reference. There was certainly much more than Mr. McVeigh and Nichols involved in that. I don't buy the government did it analysis of that, but that's a different story, and I've done numerous programs on the Oklahoma City bombing. I do think that there were elements within the government involved, but they constituted a fifth column movement, not a provocateur milieu in the usual sense of the word. I would note, though, this evidentiary tributary running between the milieu of Michael Moynihan and the milieu of the Order. Please take note of that. I think this is worth taking stock of, because the author of the Turner Diaries, William Luther Pierce, who is the head of the organization the National Alliance, which is arguably the most important domestic Nazi and fascist organization, and also the individual who, not incidentally, publishes the book Serpent's Walk, about which I'll have more to say in a few minutes, William Luther Pierce has now purchased a Nazi music company that is going to be specializing in black metal and goth music. We're going to read about that from the British anti-fascist publication The Searchlight. This is from The Searchlight's issue of January of the year 2000. This is number 295, and we're going to read about that. We're going to read about William Luther Pierce and his purchase of Resistance Records right now. Please note some of the many connections, including connections between Resistance Records in its original incarnation of the Church of the Creator, connections between Resistance Records and the financial largesse of Willis Carto of the Liberty Lobby. Note also that the front company that helped to fund Resistance Records, Imperium Incorporated, was managed by Todd Blodgett, B-L-O-D-G-E-T-T, a former Reagan White House staffer. Please note that. By the way, you can contact the Searchlight magazine at 37B New Cavendish Street, London, WC1M8JR. Telephone 020-7284-4040. Fax 020-7284-4410. Email editor at s-light.demon.co.uk. And you can visit their website at www.s-light.demon.co.uk. Of William Luther Pierce, again, the author of the Turner Diaries, the publisher of Serpent's Walk, and the head of the National Alliance, arguably the most important domestic Nazi organization, and his interest now in the black metal music scene, we read in The Searchlight. By the way, this article is entitled, got to go to the front of the publication, "Top Nazi Buys Music Business." This is co-authored by Nick Lowles and Devin Burghardt, about whom we heard more in the beginning of this program on the other side. William Pierce, leader of the National Alliance and arguably America's leading Nazi, has begun to move into the highly lucrative music business. Earlier this year, Pierce's National Alliance operation bought Resistance Records, and now Searchlight can reveal he has purchased stock and band contracts from the Swedish music operation Nordland. It is a move fueled by money, recruits, and influence. The article reads in part as follows. Quote, "We're living in an alienated era. Everything around us is unnatural and alienating. Our lives and working environment, with its government-enforced diversity, unquote, our schools, our cities, the multicultural, quote, entertainment, unquote, being churned out for us in Hollywood and New York, and especially the god-awful, non-white, quote, music, unquote, being promoted by the mainstream music industry. All of these alienating influences cut us off from our roots, they poison our souls, and they cause anger to build up inside us, unquote. So wrote William Pierce, author of the infamous Turner Diaries, in the relaunched Resistance magazine. He was explaining to readers why he had decided to buy the music operation originally established by George Bundy, B-U-N-D-I, better known as Eric Hawthorne. Quote, "In many of our people, that anger has nowhere to go. No direction," he added. Again quoting, "All too often we turn it against ourselves, and it leads to self-destructive behavior. We need to give a proper direction to that anger. We need to give it a constructive outlet," unquote. It is through this music operation that Pierce and his National Alliance, or NA, hope to dominate the extreme end of the U.S. white supremacist movement in the new millennium. Birdie and Mark Wilson, a fellow Church of the Creator supporter, set up Resistance Records in 1994. By the way, a member of the Church of Creator went berserk, but killed a bunch of people in the Chicago area in July of 1999. And an associate of Order founder Robert Matthews, Buford Furrow, killed a bunch of people in shot up a bunch of people, killing one in Los Angeles a little over a month later. Skipping down of the sponsorship of Resistance Records by Willis Carto of the Liberty Lobby, and again, the Liberty Lobby's offshoot, the Institute for Historical Review, was the leading Holocaust denial institution in this country. An associate of the black metal milieu, Keith Stimley, whom we spoke about, was for 2 years the editor of the Institute for Historical Review's publication. Continuing here, Birdie was eventually bailed out of his financial mess by Willis Carto of Liberty Lobby fame, who ran the company through California-based Ashley and Judy Brown. Quote, "Carto paid their bills through a shell company, Imperium Incorporated," unquote, says the SPLC. Listen to the following. "Managing the show was Todd Blodgett, B-L-O-D-G-E-T-T, a former Reagan White House staffer." With Carto embroiled in his own battles to retain control of the Institute for Historical Review, Resistance proved an adventure too far. After a court ruling that gave control to the Institute for Historical Review to his rivals Mark Weber and Greg Raven, Carto was forced to declare bankruptcy. Skipping down, speaking of William Luther Pierce and his assumption of the parent ownership of Resistance Records, however, there are other equally important reasons for Pierce beside the vast profits that will undoubtedly accompany the purchase. Quote, "As Resistance gained strength," unquote, Pierce wrote in an earlier bulletin, again quoting, "that acquisition should add an increasing number of younger members in the 18 to 25 age range to our ranks," unquote. But his recruits will not just be drawn from the skinhead arena. He plans to expand the Resistance operation, moving into new genres of music. Quote, "The resurrected company will handle a much broader spectrum of white resistance music, including genres such as gothic and black metal," unquote, wrote Pierce in another National Alliance bulletin. Again quoting, some of this especially that produced by musicians in Europe has a pagan or anti-Judeo-Christian theme. Some is nihilistic. Some of the themes of this white resistance music will be offensive to some members. Aside from the lyrics, the music itself will not appeal to many members. It is the type of music, however, which millions of white Americans are accustomed to," unquote. So please note that William Luther Pierce is now moving into black metal, through Resistance Records. Note also that Resistance Records was an offshoot of the Church of the Creator. We saw a reference on the cover of the book Might is Right, which had input, editorially speaking, by Michael Moynihan, a very important influence on the black metal milieu. Rahoa is an offshoot of the Church of the Creator. And note also that editor's notes for this were by the wife of David Lane, currently doing life in prison for murdering Alan Berg. He was a member of the Nazi group The Order, inspired by the Turner Diaries of William Luther Pierce. Note also that the person who managed the company that was basically funded Resistance Records for the Liberty Lobby or for Willis Carto was Todd Blodgett, a former Reagan White House staffer. But also note there are elements of overlap between the National Alliance's bulletin and people involved with the Soldier of Fortune publication as well. It's not to characterize that as fascist, but there are certainly fascist influences there. I've spoken in the past about the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, about a Nazi takeover of the United States in the mid-21st century. That book was authored by someone who writes under the name of Randolph D. Calverhall, C-A-L-V-E-R-H-A-L-L, published in soft cover by National Vanguard Books, the publishing arm of the National Alliance, copyright 1991. This book describes a Nazi takeover in the mid-21st century by the descendants of the SS, and the back cover reads as follows. The good guys win sometimes. Not always, of course. They lost big in the Second World War. That war was a victory for communists, Democrats, and Jews, but everyone else lost, including millions of GIs who were told that they were killing Germans and Japanese in order to make the world a decent place for their children to grow up, only to see things in America go from bad to much, much worse in the decades after the war. Even when the bad guys win, they sometimes grow careless and later become losers. Look what happened to the communists of Eastern Europe in the 1990s. Could the same thing happen to their erstwhile World War II allies in America? Serpent's Walk explores that possibility. It assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. Instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality, unquote. As I've said before about Serpent's Walk, I believe that just like the Turner Diaries, this book is far more than the novel it purports to be. I think it's a manifesto. I think it's a blueprint for what the Underground Reich is doing and plans to do. And note the reference here to the opinion-forming media. Let me also stress in closing that the street troops of fascism come, as I said before, from the alienated and marginalized elements of society, including people who would be disaffected leftists, such as the Strasserite wing of the Nazi Party. The shock troops, the street troops of the Nazi movement are not going to come from stockbrokers or from prep school teachers or prep school students. They're going to be people who are alienated and are also considered disposable. People may be familiar with the punk rock group The Dead Kennedys. They did a song called Nazi Punks F blank 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 off, if I'm not mistaking the title of the song. One of the lyrics in that says, "When the real ones come, you'll be the first to go." People may want to think about that. People involved with the black metal milieu may want to think about that, because the real ones are here. Think about it. That concludes this program. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.